This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Come on, girl. Yeah. It's me, Jackie Murray. Give me that look. That's right. Let's get sweaty. Let's get real sweaty. I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill a bathtub full of sweat. All right.
Daddy, who wants to love me sexy?
Hello, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. We have a special Sports Lounge for you tonight. I'm your host, the Cowboy. And we're going to be joined here in just a minute by one regular from the lounge. It's my dad, the straw that stirs the drink here in the lounge, Cowboy Senior. And also by a voice of the Friars, John Rook. So second time we've had John on, and we're really looking forward to it with the Big East tournament coming up and the NCAA tournament coming up. John's going to be here to talk some Friars basketball, some Big East, you know, touch on the NCAA, and then maybe even dive into a certain cornerback and where he's going to be signing. So, as per usual, grab yourself a drink, have a seat on the sofa, and light up a cigar. There's plenty of room for you here in the Sports Lounge. We're going to take a quick break. On the break, you'll hear about all the other great content here at Place to Be Nation, whether you're a wrestling fan, a pop culture person, or a sports fan. We have everything that you need. So take a listen to the break, and after the break, I'll be back, joined by Cowboy.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show, each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. As promised, we have a special guest making his second appearance in the Sports Lounge. We have the voice of the Providence College Friars, John Rook. How you doing, John?
Excellent. Gentlemen, welcome, and glad to be with you again.
Yes, and we're certainly glad to have you. So we're taping this on the Monday before the start of the Big East Tournament. The Friars coming off a heartbreaking loss on senior day to Butler in a senior.
Hey, Cowboy, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Doing fantastic.
And great having John here.
Absolutely. Always is. So I know you had some questions for John, so I'm going to turn it over to senior to fire away.
Okay, John, when we had you on our preseason show, we talked a lot about how the conference as a whole fared in their first year and what we wanted to see them accomplish in the second year, be that, you know, play some tough out-of-conference teams, not only the Friars, but all the teams in the Big East, and not only play those teams, but win some of those games. And I think the conference fared very well in that aspect, and then it was a great conference season. How do you feel the conference is stepping up here in their second year of the second year of existence in this conference and how it's constituted? Do you see this as it's been a very, very positive season for the Big East?
Yeah, I think largely so. I think the teams all had a mindset that they were going to go out and try to not only remain aggressive in recruiting circles, but also most everyone stepped up to ensure that their strength of schedule would be stronger this year by scheduling better games, perhaps saying, using the phrase better games sometimes is a little bit of a is a misnomer. I know everybody has their own formula for scheduling. If you have a younger team, you have a less experienced team, you're going to schedule easier on them. You don't want to throw them to the wolves. Teams that have a little bit more experience are liable to find that, you know, they're going to be challenged a little bit more, and I think that's only natural to do so. You know, in Providence's case, I actually thought that in some instances the schedule that they tried to bite off this year was a little bit more than maybe they should have tried. It looks like it's going to turn out for the best because, you know, it's the first time in now, what, about 11 years that we feel relatively comfortable going into the Big East tournament that you're going to be in the NCAAs. So because of that, it looks like it's paid off. But I also would tell you that sometimes these things can backfire on you. And if the Friars don't have, you know, extraordinary, you know, abilities from, you know, players like LaDante Hinton and Chris Dunn to lead the way, then maybe those young freshmen don't kind of grow up the way that, you know, some of them did anyway. And you're left looking on the outside, looking back in and thinking, well, shoot, if we just had one or two more wins somewhere, then it could have paid off differently. I mean, everybody looks back, I think, to what happened in December, and you lose to Boston College, and you lose to Brown back-to-back after, you know, losing to Kentucky, and you know, that was a huge turning point of the season. It could have been, unfortunately, because of the guys this team has, they were able to kind of pull themselves up and out of that. A younger team without that kind of leadership on top could have been in real trouble. So Providence benefited from that. I think, you know, all the other five teams that are in position to reach the NCAAs, I think all did the same thing as well. Maybe Villanova less so, but they didn't have to because they're just steamrolling people. So, you know, in that regard, I would have to tell you that the Big East basketball season has been a huge success, especially in light of the fact that last year there were several naysayers about the league, and then the league falling flat in the postseason a year ago didn't do, you know, the new Big East any favors. Coming out in the way that they did this year and dominating in a lot of ways in non-conference play, I think is going to cause people to stop and look at them and take them more seriously. But now the next thing to do is actually win some of these postseason games.
Exactly, exactly. Do you think that the six teams are all locks, or do you think like Xavier or maybe St. John's even need to get something done in the Big East tournament to get in, maybe win one game?
It never hurts to have that extra win, and I would say more so in Xavier's case than in St. John's case. I think St. John's is fine. I really do. The way that they ended the season winning seven of the last nine, I don't think the Red Storm are going to miss out. Xavier was the one team that I thought really needed to win their last game, which they did, barely, at Creighton. But that brought them to 9-9 a league. I think there's just a huge difference between 8-10 and 9-9, not so much from a numerical point of view, but from a perception point of view. And because Xavier got that win, and it was on the road, and it was their ninth win, and shows they clearly are an upper half or upper tier team in the league. If you add to that, as a sixth seed in the tournament, you add to that a win over Butler, then there's no doubt in my mind. Now, if they lose to Butler in their first round game in the quarterfinal game on Thursday night, then I think they're still okay. But my guess would be that Xavier's going to find themselves in, you know, an 11 or a 12 seed scenario, maybe similar to the way Providence was a year ago. And Xavier might find themselves in one of those 11 or 12 seed play-in games like they did last year. I think that's entirely probable if they don't beat Butler.
Okay, very good. As long as they get in, it would be very good.
Well, their RPI has been very good all year. They've had a strong RPI all year. They've been in the 30s, and now they've kind of dipped into the 40s a little. So, you know, winning on the road as they did, I think they're back in the top 40. I checked it earlier today, and it looked like they were right around 40. So I think that's going to be good enough to play them in. A win over Butler, however, would clinch it. There would be no doubt at all.
Yeah, the Friars holding that 23 RPI now. I mean, what a difference from the last few years. I can't remember the last time they went into the tournament with this high an RPI. And, I mean, we know that no matter what happens now, we're in the tournament. It's a nice feeling to be just playing to increase the seed instead of playing in desperation in the Big East tournament. Whereas the way it turned out last year, we thought we were in, and I got a feeling if we didn't win that championship game based on where we were seated, we might not have gotten in, getting all the way to the finals. And I think that RPI has a lot to do with it.
Oh, yeah, it has everything to do with it. It has absolutely everything to do with it.
As far as the league making, obviously, it was terrible last year in the NCAA tournament, and I think they have a good chance to get more done this year. Hopefully a few teams can advance. Maybe we could get two, like it would be a success if we got like two or three in the Sweet 16, and if Villanova makes a run, like Villanova, I see them as a legitimate national championship contender, a team that should, to me, be a one seed. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I do. I think Villanova should be a one seed, especially if they sweep through the Big East tournament. Now, if somehow the Wildcats get beaten by somebody in New York this week, then I would say they probably come off that line. I think a team like Wisconsin is probably kind of lying in wait, ready to jump up into that one slot. So I think, you know, for the Wildcats to cinch a one seed, they probably have to win out this week and claim the championship on Saturday night. Short of that, I think Villanova would be a two seed. So, again, I don't know if there's so much on perception as it is because there are three or four teams. Legitimately, they're kind of all grouped right after the three teams that probably deserve the one the most. So, I hope that they have an opportunity to get it. I also hope that if the Friars are playing Villanova in the semis and Providence is fortunate enough to get there, that Providence can give them everything they want and then some. So, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. But they deserve a one and will get a one if they end up winning the Big East Championship. Short of that, my guess is they probably slide into a two, pending what happens to those other teams in their own conference tournaments.
Yeah, we were talking to a friend of ours, a former assistant basketball coach at Durfee High School during their glory years, who comes to the games with us. And he was saying that he felt that Villanova might be the team that could match up against Kentucky because offensively they don't have to go down low and go inside and challenge those big trees inside. They shoot the three so well that they might be able to get something done offensively. And on the other end, defensively, they could definitely hold anybody down, including Kentucky. I mean, I don't know if being a ticket holder and going to all the Friar games this year, Villanova was by far the best defensive team I saw. And then when we played watching them on TV in the next game, when we played them over there, it was that same feeling. These guys are so good defensively. Do you think that they're one of the teams that has... You know, obviously, when you talk about a team winning the national championship this year, more so than any year in a long time, you say, yeah, well, if it wasn't for Kentucky, do you think Nova might be that team that could match up against Kentucky?
I think Nova is the team that could match up against Kentucky, and I've thought that since probably about midway through the season, probably even since as far back as when Providence played them. You need a unique skill set to guard their bigs because they're so active and so athletic. And while Villanova isn't a tremendously big team, I do think, though, that they shoot the ball extremely well, which would enable you to, you know, create gaps defensively. And then if you know how to attack those gaps, and I think Villanova is a very, very smart team offensively, they could probably pull that off. I'm not saying that Villanova will win. I'm saying that Villanova might give Kentucky, might be the one team that could give Kentucky some matchup troubles because they're smart, they're savvy, they're a little more experienced than some of those younger Wildcat players, Kentucky Wildcat players. Where Villanova could get in trouble is if they get, you know, Ochefu or even Javon Pinkston in foul trouble. And then Kentucky's bigs would just, they just mash them. So that would be the huge key. If Villanova could stay out of foul trouble, then I could certainly see Villanova having an opportunity.
Yeah, that whole thing with this Kentucky team, you have to go way back, I think, to find a team that's going to go into the tournament as heavily favored to win the national championship as they are. I mean, normally in the past 20 years or so, you don't get this huge, heavy favorite. But here's the thing, the last two in my memory were as heavily favored as Kentucky. I go back to the 91 UNLV team that had won the national championship in 90. And went into the NCAA tournament undefeated with Stacey Augman, Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt. And Duke beat them in that by 2 points. Duke, who they had beaten by 30 in the national title game in 90, beat them by two in the NCAA semifinals. And then the other team, obviously, would be the 95 Georgetown team, another defending champion. I can remember people making wagers around me on that team where people would take Georgetown and give the person they were betting against the rest of the NCAA field. And we know what Villanova did to that team. So it's kind of a good feeling to know that the last two teams that were that heavily favored didn't win it. You know, and if you see that, you know, they're unbeatable, but it just takes one game, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, you're right. It only does take one game, good game, which is why, frankly, I think there are, you know, probably more than just one team, probably a handful of teams, you know, they could feel like that they could have a chance. You know, I think there's a part of me that would love to see a little history made, you know, with, Kentucky being the first team to go through undefeated since 76, Indiana, and, you know, another, you know, part of me that would love to see them go through, because I've always been one to think that dynasties sometimes are really good for the sport, maybe with the exception of the UConn women on the other side of the story, because they've dominated so much. I mean, they've kind of laid all their competition to waste in the women's game. But for the men, I think it's good because it helps galvanize interest, and at least in this case. And you know that because there's so many players out there and so many good coaches and so many good teams and strong conferences now that, I think that dominant teams are very much cyclical now by nature. And so because of that, I think, you know, things can shift around from league to league, area to area, team to team. And that's why Ed Cooley dreams about having a potential national champion at Providence, because he knows that, you know, given the right set of circumstances, if you build, you know, and you can avoid the injury bug and you can schedule right, you can have one of those magical type seasons. And that's what he's shooting for. And I think last year in winning the Big East proved to us, should be proved to us all, that, you know, that's not as far-fetched as anybody really sits and thinks. If you get the right opportunity in a power league like the Big East, and you can finish, you know, in the top couple of seeds, and you can get a strong seed in the NCAA tournament, you know, and Providence could even be in position for that this year. And I'm not saying they're going to win a national title, but, you know, it's all about matchups. And so if you get a favorable seeding in the NCAAs where you can win a couple of games and then get to the Sweet 16, you know, hey, it's anybody's ball game right there. So, you know, injuries are a great equalizer, and recruiting's a great equalizer, and, you know, matchups are a great equalizer, especially if you don't play a team or you really, you know, are playing a team from another region or another part of the country that you just don't have a lot of familiarity with. And it's all about the matchup. And it absolutely is a possibility for teams like that to win on down the line.
That's right. You just got to look at, like, the Kemba Walker Connecticut team and last year's Connecticut team. Who would have saw those runs coming that those teams made? You know,
absolutely.
I wouldn't have seen it before the tournament started, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely. That's huge. UConn's a very good, that's actually a very good example, because no one really thought that they were going to amount to much, even though they won, you know, the league last year. And they didn't look like they were in position to do much of anything, and they end up getting on a roll with two very good guards. And that's a perfect example. That can happen if you get on that kind of a roll.
Exactly. Shifting our focus back to the Friars, and I don't mean to bring up a negative, but I just want to ask your opinion on something. You may be able to shed some insight on this more than we can. I was telling people around me in the seats Saturday that, you know, the bittersweet part about the day is, you know, it's hard to say goodbye to guys like LaDante and Tyler and Carson, but I said, you know, we could very well be seeing Chris play his last game in this building today, and that one really hurts. What do you think the chances are that Chris comes back next year?
Well, that's certainly the question on the tip of the tongue of most Friar fans now, and, you know, it's the elephant in the room, and amongst all the discussions I know that are probably going on amongst a lot of Friar fans, and most of the guys that I know, most people that I know are tending to kind of put that aside and try to enjoy this run. Hopefully there will be a little bit of a run for a week or you know, maybe more. I personally believe that he's coming back another year. I know that there's been some discussion about it internally. I know that Chris is going back and forth with his parents, and I know that Dodd Shamgod is a big influence on Chris. And I was talking about this with him maybe about a week or two ago, and he said, look, don't be surprised if, you know, Chris is pretty balanced. Chris knows that he still has some rust to knock off from basically missing 2 years of play. Chris knows he can come back and be the man. And, you know, Chris also knows that, you know, he's got a few things in his game that he needs to work on.
And even if he is slotted somewhere around, say, 15 to 20 in the opening, in the first round of the NBA draft, then there's no guarantee you're going to get taken, because Ricky Lito was slotted around 18 to 20, and he got bumped all the way down into the 40s. And now look, he's out of pro basketball. So I think Chris realizes that, you know, this is the way the game is played, and the NBA draft game, the way it's played, he could end up doing some workouts without hiring an agent. That would not shock me. And then once he does his workouts and he gets an evaluation, my guess would be that, you know, most scouts will say, look, we love your ability, but, you know, you need to work on this, work on that. We could see you somewhere in that, you know, 18 to 25 range in the NBA draft. And if that's the case, I think it's a no-brainer. I think you come back and you work on the things the scouts tell you to work on, and then you become a top 10 pick. If you come back next year, you're going to be the preseason favorite to win player of the year. And if you can live up to that billing, and by the way, that's very tough to do. I mean, Devontae Smith-Rivera was the preseason player of the year this year in the Big East. And he had a great season. He had a great season, and he still did not win the – he's still not going to win the award, I don't think. He's first-teamer, and he's eligible for it, and the player of the year is going to come out of that group of seven players that made the first team. But I don't think he's going to win the award. And I think we all realize that the winner of the award is probably going to boil down to Darren Hilliard or Chris or LaDante. And I kind of tend to think that Chris and LaDante may cancel each other out. And now if Chris wins it this year, if he wins the Player of the Year award, all bets are off. I hate to put it like that, but I think all bets are off. And I think that, you know, if he wins that award and he has any kind of a run, any kind of like a sham god-like run like he did in 97, then I think there's every possibility that he'll test the waters. Short of that, I think he's mentally prepared already to pursue another year at PC.
I've been quietly rooting for him to win that award. I'm going to change my thought now and hope he doesn't win. It gives us a better chance to keep him. But in my mind, he's the best player in the league. I realize that, you know, a couple of things that we talk when you talk about improving on his game would be probably his being more consistent with his outside shot and cutting down on the turnovers a little bit. But as far as being like a defensive player and just everything he does, everything he brings. And if it was his last game as a Friar Friday, he gave us some two or three highlight reel moves going to the hole Saturday, rather, that I'm never going to forget. Some of the best moves I've ever seen a guy make in person. I hope he comes
back.
Well,
he's got the ability. There's no doubt about that. But, he's because of his size, he's going to be asked to play probably off the ball just as much as he's going to be playing on the ball. And because of that, he has a tendency to force passes in situations in college that, you know, guys just aren't ready for. Now, it may very well be he'll have professional teammates that can catch some of those passes, but he's still forcing the ball into tight situations, and that boils down to recognition. And I think Chris also knows that he needs to recognize situations where he needs to either pass the ball or take the shot himself. And I think that's still something he's working on, and that's coming with basically trying to knock almost 2 years of rust off of his game. And because he's going to have to play off the ball, look, and he's such a tremendous penetrator in his ability to probe a defense and get into the lane and get to the rim, guys are flat out just going to lay off of him. They're just going to back off, and they're going to make him shoot. It's the whole Rajon Rondo, you know, scenario. And, you know, does Chris want to be Rajon Rondo, or does he want to be better? And the only way he can be better is he's got to have the three-point threat. And right now, you know, his threat from, you know, outside the three-point line, he's average, maybe at best. I mean, he's only a 33% shooter outside the arc. And, of course, the arc in the pro game is 2 feet further back than it is in the college game. So, and until he can shoot, you know, if he can shoot between 35 and 40%, then I'd say, all right, now you got something. And I'd say, you know, if you can hit one out of every three as a pro, you're doing okay. That's going to keep you honest. He can't get away with 25 to 28% shooting threes. He's going to have to do better than that. Otherwise, I just don't think he's going to have a very long shelf life in the NBA.
And like you said, having Shamgod around him could be a great thing. But there's still a lot of people. Shamgod's the poster child of the guy that shouldn't have came out after his freshman year. That if he would have came back for one more year, the story of his career might have been a little different. He might have had a decent career as an NBA point guard. He just wasn't ready when he came out. So hopefully that influence on Chris helps too.
Hopefully, that's exactly right.
And I think Sham God is kind of a. I think he was a sophomore, if I'm not mistaken, when he came out.
He was a sophomore.
It's a guy who is a similar player to Chris Dunn, and you know all the quicks in the real world. Great athlete, great handle, but his downfall was his outside shot. Where if he would have stayed and worked on his outside shot, he had every other facet of his game was fantastic. But you know, with all that said, if Dunn puts the Friars on his back and they make the final eight or the final four or something, and he comes out and is a high first round pick, I mean that's fantastic for the program too, and that's great for Chris. So we'll certainly be rooting for them. So John, I had a quick question about this year's team for you. So as a senior said, you know, season ticket holders, you know, religiously follow the Friars. And the thing that really sticks out to me when they play really the top echelon teams is if there are teams that can kind of shut down Chris and LaDante and make them have the third option beat them, that's where they've gotten into some problems this year. And, you know, Bentil stepped up, but he's young, right? So he's a little inconsistent. Harris, a little inconsistent. One, do you think that having that reliable third option is the key to their success going forward? And two, if you had to guess, who do you think it would be?
Well, I think it's definitely a key to their success. If they don't have a reliable third option to score, then they're not going to go very far, whether it's this next week in New York or the week after that, wherever they may end up going. I'm happy to see that Tyler Harris, even though they lost the game to Butler, I thought that was one of his more aggressive performances of the entire year. And so if we could get that kind of an aggressive Tyler Harris on the offensive end, I think Providence can put up with any kind of, you know, defensive lapses that he may have. And I think they would take that and move on with it. You know, when Bentil had that, game last weekend when he went for, or against Seton Hall, when he went for 21-10, you know, again, that's the third option that you're looking for. So, and usually when you have that third option, things are going to go real well for you. So somebody has to pick up the slack. I think Harris is probably the more likely option because he has the better offensive game. Bentil picked it up at Seton Hall, and I think, you know, I think that's fine. I think he's capable. I'll tell you also, I think he's capable, and Joe and I spent a lot of time talking about him on the radio, is Kyron Cartwright. He just needs to continue to be aggressive looking for his shot. But there's no reason he can't score, you know, 10 to 15 points a game and take a lot of the burden off of Chris Dunn by running the point and let Chris basically, you know, slide over the two and create some real matchup difficulties potentially for some guards. Whereas there's already a matchup difficulty maybe outside of, you know, someone like, you know, Rasheed Jordan at St. John's, who will have to, you know, face up with a little bit on Thursday, or someone like an Alex Barlow at the Butler, who's certainly capable of, you know, flicking the ball away. You know, playing off of the two guard, that could be a little bit different just because teams, I don't think, respect his shot. And so they're going to back off on him, and that's going to give Chris a chance to hit that mid-range jumper perhaps quite a bit more, and that's where he can excel. He has hit 15 to 17-foot jump shot pretty well. It's just the deeper he goes, the more inconsistent he gets, which is natural. So, you know, I think Cartwright is another one of those guys that continue to develop. You know, I think we're all sort of disappointed in what we've seen this year from Jalen Lindsey. I still profess that Lindsey will end up becoming a very good collegiate player. I think, you know, after that ankle injury that he had, you know, way back in the in November at Mohegan Sun, I think it was against Notre Dame, that I don't think he was ever the same after that. And so because of that, he's had a really hard time getting back on track with his shooting confidence. And once he takes a shot and he misses it, he goes off the deep end. So it's very important right now for a guy like Lindsey to hit his first shot of the game for him to have any sort of offensive threat the rest of the game. And that's just going to come with more maturity and another offseason of working and getting stronger. So, you know, I still think he can be a threat before too long. But, you know, as far as this team is concerned, I think option A is definitely got to be Harris. And option B is got to be Ben Bentil. And then, you know, after that, you know, perhaps Kyron Cartwright can chip in as well.
Yeah, that's a great point about Cartwright, John. And, you know, it seemed like, the game at Villanova where, you know, all season up until then, Cartwright has open jump shots, right? He's not taking the jump shots. And it seemed like, I don't know, Cooley talked to him, but it was that particular game where he just said, it seemed like he just said, if I'm open, I'm shooting. And he's been doing that the rest of the season with good results. I mean, he's fast and he, you know, to your point, he doesn't, they lay off him because he's not the, he doesn't have a rep as a great outside shooter, but he could be a sleeper to step up in the tournament.
Yeah, I think so. He definitely can. I just, the thing that gets me is that, you know, he'll move to the wing, you know, when he takes a pass onto the wing, and he'll fake the jumper, and then nobody's biting on the fake. You know, for the fake to work, he's got to shoot the ball. And I think that's part of the learning process that Kyron's got to come up with. He'll fake, and then he'll try to drive, and then he gets cut off, and then he backs up, and that just wastes time on the shot clock. You know, if he's going to take the shot, go up with the shot. And, you know, if you can knock one or two down, then the fake's going to work. Then you can, you know, create contact into the defender and get yourself a foul line. And that's how big scoring games happen. That's what LaDante, frankly, needs to do. That's something that we've talked about as well a lot lately. You know, Hinton needs to lay off the three-pointers, and he needs to do what he does best, and just slash and drive to the basket. And I think Sir Dominic Poynter, who's going to match up with him, you know, on Thursday, without a doubt, he's going to let LaDante have all he wants from outside. He's going to only be, you know, interested, you know, in LaDante getting to the basket. And that, frankly, is where LaDante needs to concentrate. So it's going to be incumbent on LaDante to knock down a shot or two and make Poynter respect him. And then you're going to fake that shot and you're going to drive and you need to get Poynter in foul trouble. I think the only way that the Friars really win this game against St. John's, they've got to get one of their bigs, either, you know, Obekpa if he's available, and I anticipate Obekpa and Branch, who are both out against Villanova, I anticipate both of them playing, but they've got to get either Obekpa or Poynter in some kind of difficulty where they don't play 30 minutes in the game. If they can do that, then I think the Friars will have an opportunity to win in advance.
And if we could have drew it up, we certainly wouldn't have wanted St. John's in the first round and then Villanova next. The way St. John's matched up against us this year and the way Nova matched up against us, it couldn't be a much tougher road. But hey,
well, it's the same road we had last year. So I think that's how they're kind of reasoning it. You know, it's the same exact road they had last year, and Villanova got upset by Seton Hall. And guess what? Irony of irony, Seton Hall could have a chance to, you know, get into that game again. Now, I don't know that they're good enough to beat Villanova, but you know what? In this tournament, we all know anything can happen, and it usually does. So let's kind of wait and see. I think it'd be kind of interesting to kind of play this thing out a little bit. If the seeds hold a form from last year, you know, then Friars, if they were able to, you know, win the first two games to get to the finals, you know, it could potentially face a Georgetown or maybe even a Butler in the championship, which would be outstanding. And I don't think anybody would, discount, you know, Providence's chances in that kind of a scenario. So, you know, get the first one out of the way and then just take your chances against the number four team in the nation. And no matter what happens, let it fly because you really don't have anything to lose here.
Yeah, and you know the old adage, John, that it's tough to beat a good team three times in the same season. So the Friars can hang their hat on that as well.
Hope so. I hope that's right.
There you go. Hey, John, can I just ask you one more thing? It's
sure.
I don't want to be the guy negative, but I can't help it. It's something that definitely worries me as a Friar fan. Given the success we've had the last 3 years, where 19 plus wins 3 years in a row. The last time we did it was under Gavitt. I couldn't believe it when I heard that. And then you look back and you think of the great teams we had and the great runs under a few coaches, and we had never done that before. Obviously, it's a great fear. I mean, any big jobs that come up, Ed's going to be on people's list. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's such an impressive guy. Part of me says I hope he knows that. As great as he is, his perfect fit is here in Providence. I just feel like he is so much the right guy for us. But how worried should we be about Ed leaving?
You shouldn't be.
Okay, that's good to hear.
It's that simple. He's I don't think he's looking at anything. Now, you know, if this team were to, you know, win for a consistent amount of time, you know, and maybe actually compete for that national title that he's talked about, then you might find, you know, some of the blue bloods when they have an opening, you know, come sniffing around. But short of that, where he could, you know, triple, you know, his salary largely, I don't know that he does that, because he's, very much involved in, the building of the new basketball center. And, he's already ensconced in recruiting over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And, he's pretty much laid the groundwork here. And this is his hometown, as you know. So it'd be pretty difficult, I think, to pry him away from his family and from the things that he's familiar with and the situation that he currently has at Providence. He likes being the underdog, and he knows that if he goes, to a big school, especially a one that has football, that, that won't necessarily be the case. And the demands are, and the expectations are vastly different from what they are here. I don't really think that there's a whole lot to worry about. Now, you never say never, because anything can happen in this business when money, gets thrown around. I mean, anything can happen. We've seen the breakup of leagues and rivalries and all things just because of money. So money can certainly talk and make other people walk. But for the immediate future, I don't think there's too much to worry about.
Good. Being someone, I don't want to overstate it, but I've been like a major, major fanatical Friar fan since my brother was at PC, and he graduated in 66. And a lot of years later, I followed and went there, but I followed this basketball team closely since then. And I don't think we've ever had a coach that was so much of a perfect fit for us. Him and Providence just mesh. He's just perfect. He's in the perfect place. And it's such a joy to see our program going where it is now. And I know it's, as long as he sticks around, he's going to keep moving forward. So when I go to bed at night, that's one of my prayers. Please stick around, Ed. It's just great. I absolutely think the world of the guy. And I'm sure you do, too. You
absolutely
have contact.
A lot of fun to work with. Yeah.
All right. That's great, John. Well, let's hope we make a run here. Let's hope we make a run in the Big East tournament and then an NCAA run. It's magical in the years that it happens, and I got a feeling this could be one of those years. The possibility is there, no doubt about it, and it would be a really exciting thing to see.
It's all about the matchups, guys. That's it. It's all about the matchups. You get a favorable matchup and get on a run and build some momentum, and that's how magical things happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be a fun tournament this week, John. Enjoy yourself in New York. We'll be listening to you for sure. And before you go, John, one quick question. So what's on everybody's mind right now? Darrell Revis, is he coming back?
Well, I hope he is. I think that I think he'll end up probably testing the market. And from everything that I've heard, today when we're taping this, I think it's going to boil down to the Patriots and the Jets. My guess is that, the Jets could blow him away with an offer, but my guess is the Patriots have told him, look, you get that offer and come back and let's see if we can work it out. That's my guess, because I know he likes it here. I know he liked the culture here. I know that he enjoyed his time immensely, and I think he also knows that now it's all about legacy. In the game, everybody can have money, but money eventually runs out. But legacy lasts forever, and I think he finally realizes that's the case. Whereas before he came here, he didn't know that. Once you get a taste of it, and once you win that, and which he, was a part of this year, I think that there's something to that. I think if the Patriots can at least get close and make him a competitive offer, where he's, in that top, two or three in terms of being paid at that position, I think he'd be satisfied with that. So, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
I agree with you, John, that I think it goes against his nature, given the past, right, to not take every available dollar. But if there was ever a season or ever a team that would make you not that would make you leave a million or two on the table in order for a chance to, the fifth Super Bowl would be history, right? That's game, set, and match as far as best quarterback ever and all that stuff. That's put the fifth Super Bowl in that dynasty. So I think for Revis to be a part of that, hopefully it's worth a couple of million less for him. So we'll see.
I hope so, too. And I think that's a great point. I think it's a great point. If the Patriots could, keep the core of this team together, then they have a chance to win one for the thumb and, match the Steelers and the 49ers and the Cowboys, right, with five. Or the 49ers have five? I've lost count. I know the Steelers and the Cowboys have five.
Yeah.
So I'd have to look that up off the top of my head.
This would be all with the same coach and quarterback, So it would be.
Well, of course, yeah.
That never
did. And obviously, Right. The Cowboys don't have that with the same coach and quarterback. So that would be unprecedented, which would be, you know, tremendous. And hopefully that'll appeal to his competitive nature.
But if not, there's no ill will here. You know, if you told me before last year we're going to bring Revis in, we're going to win the Super Bowl, and then he's going to leave, I would have taken that all day.
So, yeah, I think we all would have. Absolutely. You can't help but get greedy after that.
So, but again, John, enjoy the time in New York. We really appreciate you coming on, and the fans do as well. You're always great, and we hope to have you on again in the future.
Fellas, sounds like the plan. Happy to do it.
All right, very good. And so for Cowboy Senior, for John Rook, I'm the Cowboy, and I'm out.
I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill the bathtub full of sweat.
Who wants to love you sexy?
Love me sexy.
Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy?
Lick me sexy.
Take off your shoes and suck me sexy.
Suck me sexy.
Baby, we'll make it and we'll hump me sexy. Your body says love me, your mind says sexy.
Love me sexy.
Baby, who wants to love me sexy?
Love me sexy.
Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy?
Lick me sexy.
Take off your shoes and suck me sexy.
Suck me sexy.
Baby, we'll take it and we'll hump me sexy. Of the week, are you in the mood to fly to the stars with Jackie Moon? When I say love me, you say sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Love me, sexy.
Sexy.
My zodiac signs are compatible. Clocking that ass from across the room. Your body says love me, your mind says sexy.
Sexy. Love me, sexy.
Baby, who wants to love me sexy? Ready to lick me sexy.
Lick me sexy.
Take off your shoes and suck me sexy.
Suck me sexy.
Baby, we're naked and we're humping sexy.
That's right, girl. Let me whisper in your ear. Baby, wake up. We're naked and we're humping sexy. For the last 15 minutes, baby. That's what's been happening. Yeah. Too late now. It's on.
Baby, who wants to love me sexy?
Love me sexy.
Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy?
Lick me sexy.
Take off your shoes and suck me sexy.
Is it you? Take off your shoes and suck me sexy.